Speaking of, we got the thumbs up.
We got the thumbs up.
Yeah, are you, you've just completely abandoned your responsibility to look for the thumbs up.
I was not paying attention. All right, let's get right away to some news topics so that people don't click out of this video.
We need you to stay.
California elections. That's what we're talking about.
Okay.
I hear there was an election in California.
And did this election happen on American soil?
What? An election, you say? Spencer Pratt.
Yep.
And that's in the mayor race.
And Los Angeles mayor's race.
Oh, my God. I already broke this pen.
Well, you have a second throwing holding pen,
We were trying to see if this was going to be good enough. This pen was not ready for prime time.
No, that's a separate pen. I thought there was a...
No, this was the pen.
That was the pen?
No one cares.
Okay. It's
Spencer Pratt, unclear if he's advancing yet, but he's on track to advance...
Into the second round of elections. So in California, for those who don't know, there's one big nonpartisan called a jungle primary where all the candidates compete, and then the two top vote getters, provided no one gets 50% of the vote, advance to a runoff
election. Whoever swings on the vines.
Very good.
Correctly.
Yeah. I'm surprised there was never any sort of like woke opposition to the term jungle primary.
Yes.
You know, shouldn't that have been considered racist or sexist?
Racist or against indigenous people who actually have lived in jungles.
And have been voting in primaries since the dawn of time.
Yeah. Voting multiple times.
Right.
Yeah.
So the big races were the Los Angeles mayor's race where Karen Bass... Got a plurality of the vote, but a strong showing from former reality TV show
man.
What do you call someone who's on a reality TV show?
Reality TV
actor.
Star.
Okay,
yeah.
Star.
Yeah.
Okay.
Influencer.
Ugh, yeah,
influence. The culture is downstream of it was reality TV first, and now
it has
given birth
TV.
To influencers.
Yeah, the ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We're just
reality
influencers.
TV. Influencer,
you and I are just
politics.
Influencers. That's what your job is. You just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
I know it because I've been doing this kind of thing.
You know,
longer than you.
Okay.
So I know that there is no nobility or elegance to what we do. We're no better than the people who are dancing and doing makeup tutorials or whatever the fuck they do.
Yeah.
We're no different.
I got an earful of this last night when you called me to say the same thing.
Well, I called you drunkenly at 4 a.m.
You think you're better.
You are no one. No one. I hope you look in the mirror every day when you wake up.
Yeah.
And
no, I still hear you, the voice ringing in my head.
Good.
But
good.
Okay, that all said. No, yeah. I agree. I'm crawling on my belly with the other members of the real world.
You're a worm.
And everything else.
Yeah. A worm. You don't even have legs to lift your belly up off the ground.
No. So you
don't even have a evil kind of nobility the way that a snake does. You're just a worm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Well, you're co-host of the podcast.
No, I know what I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know how what a loathsome low creature I've become.
Okay, but we can say this. We can say that. Hey, we can say this. We can say this. We might be lowly pawn scum without even a forked tongue to lie through. But you know what? We have not sunk so far that we are politicians running for office.
That's
like
right.
These guys.
Those are the real bad guys.
Those are the real bad guys.
How do we feel about Spencer Pratt? We have some, I feel, not to speak for both of us, speaking only for myself, I feel some warmth for him. Because he sees it on homelessness.
Yeah,
that the problem is not lack of financial resources that have been put toward providing literal housing for the homeless. When we talk about the homeless in a city such as Los Angeles, by and large, what we are talking about is mentally ill drug addicts who are choosing to live on the street because that's where the hardcore drugs they are addicted to are sold and provided to. And they're not going to go live in a house that has rule or like a shelter that has, you can't come and go as you please. They're not going to do it. So, and in fact, if they wanted to, they can, because there is housing available for every single person who wants a bed, and they don't want it.
I guess I would disagree with that a little bit. I mean, that is certainly part of the equation, right? People who are drug addicts, mentally ill, live on the streets because they want to,
right?
And care little for the offer of free resources. And even if they do get a home, right, they will still be on the streets doing drugs, right?
Yeah.
That is a big part of it. But I mean, also California just has a crippling housing crisis where a lot of people who, you know, basically it's like there's you know, drug addiction, mental illness, job loss, whatever. These are individual factors that would explain why someone falls into homelessness, right?
Sure.
But in general, like your number of homeless people is, I think, a pretty clearly a product of housing costs, right? So it's like if housing costs go down, someone with a drinking problem can keep themselves housed, right? Mm-hmm. But then if housing costs go up, then they're out on the street, mm-hmm. right? And California has kept pushing the housing costs up and up and up that increasingly functional people are left on the streets as well, right? Mm-hmm. So it's two issues. And I think Spencer Pratt is better about the first one and see, and like also when you go to Los Angeles, like West Coast cities,
yeah,
like DC has a serious homelessness problem, yeah. right? But it's not, the city has taken efforts to clear encampments, and also just like the homeless population seems less insane, less psychotic. Well, when if you go to Los Angeles,
yeah.
or Portland or San Francisco, it's the homeless are more menacing. Well, because it's more of the it's a lot more of the population you described.
Yeah, because people who look, it is not common and easy to get yourself in such a desperate strait that you have no home and are mentally ill and suffering severe drug addiction to very dangerous drugs. Yeah. Like this does not, it's not like, oop, I lost my job today. Now this happens.
Yeah.
Like this is a pretty rare condition to end up in. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a big enough country that it affects thousands of people, but it's not all that common.
Yeah.
I think if you find yourself in this condition, you will eventually make your way to, I mean, LA is the most friendly place to be for you in this condition.
Yeah.
The weather there is nice. The best for you to yeah. be outside. Mm-hmm. There is not, right, there has been some level of enforcement of this kind of thing in DC. There's not been enforcement of this in LA.
Not really, yeah.
There are other people like, I mean, it just, it attracts.
Yeah.
They have there's a thriving, unfortunately, yeah. culture of people living on the street.
Sure.
Yeah. And so the menacing people who will get eventually chased out of wherever,
yeah,
is naturally that's where they would end up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, I think that's right. Bring it back to Spencer Pratt. I've been expecting a candidate like this for a while. Like at West Coast
you
cities,
you have foreseen this.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of spice, and so I saw it coming.
Yeah,
but I feel like L.A. or San Francisco or Portland or, you know, a lot of these West Coast cities have been primed for like this kind of candidate for a while. So mm-hmm. it can't be a literal Republican because, mm-hmm. you know, the brand is so toxic there in big cities. But someone who is this kind of like populist, like the bums at City Hall have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
And there's all these quality of life issues that they don't seem to care about and won't address. And so it is remarkable, his showing, right? I think this is the first time since 2005 where Los Angeles, an incumbent mayor has had to go to a runoff election. So that speaks, and Karen Bass is terrible, right?
Yeah.
She's been a
loathsome and underhanded.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
Takes one
yeah.
to know one.
Yeah, right?
She's down in the mud with us.
Okay, here we go. she is the
wriggling and squirming.
She's the perfect example of a Democrat who is just like, oh, everything is fine, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing inspiring or enterprising about her at all. Yeah, there was another candidate on the ballot there. I'm forgetting her name, Indian woman.
Nithya
yeah, exactly. I told it to you
Nithya
before.
I don't know. Yeah. It's Nithya something.
Yeah. So this is what's unfortunate is you have someone like Karen Bass who is
Nithya Raman. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Very
good.
Simpler Indian name than I thought.
Who is a disaster, right? Like,
yeah.
Just like a go along to get along big city mayor, right. Which is not what you want when your city has serious problems that need addressing and some hard politics that requires to fix them. But then our responses, you know, the insurgent candidates are either Spencer Pratt, who has some good ideas, but is also like kind of a little bit of a
joke.
Think
so?
Yeah.
And I also, haven't I heard him think, say, I'm waiting for the moment where he says something like really stupid. And I have yet, I mean, I haven't paid attention to every single thing he's done and said.
Yeah.
I mean, he's resisted the temptation. This is a hard thing to be like, he's not that Trumpy, really.
Yeah.
Because that would be dead in the water. Like
sure.
Steve Hilton
is super.
Is well, that he's a Fox News conservative.
That is the Republican candidate who
at the
won,
governor's level.
Yeah, won the first round of the governor's
election. Because the Democratic vote was split
so many
seven different ways.
Yeah.
No one expects him to.
Okay. Well, we'll get into the governor's race.
Okay.
But yeah, so Raman, she's like pretty smart on a lot of the housing stuff, right? Like, she gets the problem with zoning and the housing supply. And like, I'm trying to fix the homeless issue more globally, but she's also just like an insane socialist. Who loves rent control and everything else. But yeah, my complaint is like, these are your two options if you don't like the status quo, right? Is an outsider with minimal amount of experience, maybe some good ideas, but probably not the chops to get it done. And then someone who has is like a wonkier candidate with a deeper understanding of the problem. She's a city council member, but is also a far left lunatic in her own way. And so like, her enterprising nature leads you to some good policies and a lot of bad policies.
My tolerance for socialism at the local level is very small.
Yeah.
So even if all Spencer Pratt does is keep that lady out of the runoff.
Yeah, you're happy for it?
He's done a public service.
Yeah, I'm getting increasingly irritated with a Comrade Zoran up in New York. Particularly because he's going to inspire our own revolution here in D.C., right?
So, we're going to have Janice George.
Yeah, Lewis George.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Janice Lewis George. Yeah. She's no bueno.
Yeah, I mean, It's interesting the DC mayor's race because, like, between her and Kenyon McDuffie, who is the more establishment candidate, their policy positions honestly aren't that far apart.
Right.
It's just like, who do you trust to run the
city?
Not the socialists.
I do not trust her at all. Socialism is bad.
It's bad.
It's just a really bad idea. It's been responsible for just misery and starvation
dozens of deaths
globally, and I don't even want to give it not even a little bit.
Okay.
Today, not tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just no.
Okay.
It's my hard line.
So you're a Karen Bass fanatic now.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Literally fiddling while the city burns.
Although
she can't play the violin. So.
No. I was watching her do a rally. And she's just doing very phoned in, like kind of generic, like quasi racial progress. We have come so far and we have more to come. Like, for a crowd of, mostly black supporters. And it's like, but it's phoned in with no specificity or like.
And nothing having to do with the current moment, right?
She's an establishment candidate.
Right.
The politics she represents are extremely popular and powerful and successful within the apparatus of the Democratic Party.
Like, you guys, your revolution has succeeded.
Your revolution has succeeded beyond the wildest dreams of the civil rights icons of the 60s. Like, there is no battle to win here. I don't know what to say.
Just power to maintain.
Power to maintain.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic. Yeah, it's so funny listening to her in interviews where, housing, that's the main issue I cover at Reason. And they'll ask her questions like, the environmental law they have there, this is used by NIMBYs to block housing. She's like, oh, yeah, sure. Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, let me tell you an example of when I did that.
Elsewhere, you had the national, the governor race.
Yes, yes.
And it's Javier Becerra.
Very good.
Is going to be the other guy, it looks like.
And he, like Karen Bass, is just like stand-in Democrat, right?
Yes.
He is like
replacement-level Democrat.
If you thought everything was just fine in the Biden administration, because he was HHS secretary under Biden and California AG before that. If you thought everything was going great in Washington while Joe Biden was president, and before that, that everything has been going pretty well in
Millions
California.
Millions of Democrats do feel that way.
Yep.
Then this is your guy.
You should vote for this guy.
Yeah.
Yes. Then Steve Hilton, I guess, actually won the votes. Yeah. So Steve Hilton is a Fox News host endorsed by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And again, this is what pisses me off, right? Yeah. It's like the state should be primed for a conservative backlash, something to shake things up, let's get fucking Arnie back in there, but instead it's just like a literal Fox News host endorsed by Donald Trump. Also, he has an English accent.
He's British.
Yes, which that seems like it should be unconstitutional,
It's a very powerful English accent.
He sounds good.
He sounds like he should be narrating like audiobooks.
Yes.
Of some kind. He should be a Jeremy Irons type.
Yes.
Work.
Yeah, narrating the intro to a fantasy movie.
Yes.
So he's got that voice, but then he also looks like a soccer hooligan, right?
Yeah.
And so he's like both. He has toughness and refinement.
Yeah.
But
he's the real deal, the whole package.
Yeah, right. he looks good on TV. That's all I need. Yeah, so he won the actual vote, but he's going to, in whatever, whoever the second candidate is going to crush him, right?
There were some defeats for socialism that, again, I like to see in the Nancy Pelosi successor race.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Speaking of names, we cannot pronounce it. Shoykat Chakrabarty, I think.
Yeah, nailed it.
That was the AOC backed. I think he worked for AOC at one point.
Yes.
Handsome guy. I will say that. Mm. Good looking.
Didn't do it enough.
No. Up against Scott Wiener.
Yes.
Who is not well liked by a lot of conservatives because he's openly gay, and by that I mean.
Very
is like marching in the pride parade in like leather and
yeah,
whatever.
They're like there's like a BDSM festival there in San Francisco.
Yeah, but he's the moderate
because he was up against the
socialist. He crushed the socialist,
and then he also crushed the kind of a Nancy Pelosi endorsed like San Francisco machine candidate.
Right?
As
no,
well.
He's the machine candidate.
No. So he has for a long time been the state senator for San Francisco. But Nancy Pelosi endorsed a board of supervisor member Connie Chan, and then you had the socialist upstart, right? So he has a little
interesting.
Yeah, and he's also been Scott Wiener is very annoying on Twitter.
So annoying.
On the national level, it's unfortunate he's going to Congress because on all his national political opinions are terrible and annoying and grating. As a state legislator.
And the conservatives are going to be so annoying. They're like, this is the Democratic Party. And it's just going to be slightly cringy pictures of him.
Exactly.
So it's going to pride flag and
it's going to invite all the ugliness we've come to expect from conservatives too. But
not from all conservatives. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But,
I don't know where this is coming.
Oh yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
As a state legislator, he's a smart guy who is
good on housing.
Very good on housing. I mean, he's kind of not single-handedly.
That's
but
all it takes with you, isn't it? Good on housing.
It's the issue I focus on, and it's a big issue.
Yeah,
it's a big issue.
And your heart just starts beating out of your chest.
Yeah, and like even some of the stuff where it's like people like he. I'm going to butcher the details here, but he passed a bill to reduce the disparities in how the law treats like Romeo and Juliet exceptions between. Heterosexual couples and homosexual couples. And that's like a thing. If you're a smart politician at all, you would just like stay
absolutely
100%
not, no
away.
Way. I'm sure he's completely correct on the merits of doing that.
Yes,
but
it was basically like if a 19-year-old has sex with a 17-year-old and they're heterosexual couple, then it's legal.
Right.
But then if it's homosexual, then it's like 10 years in prison.
He had something too about reducing penalties for like knowingly infecting someone
that
with
seems
HIV.
Much worse.
I don't know. I think the argument is that
how would you know?
Well, no. If you don't know, I'm not sure. I don't know. I think you have to knowingly have infected someone.
Yeah.
I think the argument is that HIV is just not is much more. It's completely true. It's not curable, but it's not a death sentence by any. It's in fact, with proper treatment, it doesn't affect your life expectancy at all anymore.
Yeah.
So that would be the argument for, before it was like murdering someone.
Right. Sure.
But I'm not endorsing that.
Yeah.
That's just a.
But I mean, that's.
You're thinking about policy if you're thinking through things like that.
Yeah, and you kind of respect that. And, I have plenty of my disagreements with Scott Wiener on the national level, or he's one of these guys who's a big fan of like forcing Catholic hospitals to do abortions
and
trans
surgeries.
What else are hospitals for?
Yes.
But
the other guy was a socialist.
But the other
and
guy
what
was
did
a
we just say?
Socialist.
No
or evil.
Socialist.
No socialist.
We're not compromising on this.
Can we get a big red X on
We're
the
not doing it anymore.
Yeah. No socialism.
Yeah.
So the socialist lost, and he was a very obnoxious socialist at that.
Yeah.
I
don't care if the other guys lowered the age of consent all the way down. I mean, no. That's bad.
one of these tech millionaires who's like, we're going to take it to the tech millionaires, right? That was the socialist in that race.
That's what Hassan Piker was furious about this because he obviously supported the socialist. And he's like, this is gay techno-fascism.
Oh, wow.
Dude, I love it.
I love it when the communists embrace their, inner...
Well, he's a third worldist and an Islamist, so
right,
of course
exactly.
He has no love for the gay...
It's bourgeois degeneracy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so many communist rebel groups have been just like virulently homophobic, right? Yeah.
And so that brings us to a topic I wanted to discuss. So
homophobia.
Andy Ogles, he's a very conservative Republican had tweeted, mm-hmm. like, you know, in response to, it's Pride Month or something, mm-hmm. had tweeted, homosexuality has no place in America.
Oh, okay.
That's not even like gay marriage has no place in America, yeah. but like,
yeah. So
they asked, I think it was the TMZ, you know, there's the TMZ guys in DC mm-hmm. now. They're kind of cool. Yeah. I talked to them on Rising. They asked Ted Cruz what he thinks about that. Let's actually play that clip.
Andy Ogles, a Republican from Tennessee, he says that homosexuality has no place in America. Agree or disagree?
Well, I think for all of recorded history, homosexuals have been part of humanity. And, you know, I got to say, I'm quite libertarian by nature. I think the behavior of consenting adults is their business.
But what do you think about a member of your party saying that they just have no place in America, like forget marriage, just no place?
I gave you my.
So Ted Cruz said, in case you didn't see it, because we didn't actually play it, we're going to insert it into the video later, and I don't think if you saw it, I'm kind of libertarian on what people do in their personal lives.
We should deport and homosexuals.
No, he said, I think homosexuality has probably been here as long as there's been people living here.
Wow, okay,
and no,
yeah.
it was a great answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, what people do in their privacy is none of my, so.
Okay.
He rebuked the answer. It was great. It was just nice to hear someone say something
reasonable,
quasi-libertarian yeah. on a cultural issue
yeah.
that will slightly annoy the most easily annoyed people on their
yeah,
own side
right.
and just kind of not bat an eyelash and just say what they really think about it
yeah.
was refreshing.
Just
and it was that bastard Ted Cruz, whom I always have had a soft spot for. And that's legal in this country, goddammit. Yeah. but then Andy Ogles actually walked it back.
Wow.
He
hit the comment back in the closet.
That's right.
Yeah.
He said he pulled up. My staffers got a hold of my phone, and you know my some staffer
wow.
who's probably closeted themselves
yeah.
and a Nazi
yeah.
tweeted this, and I don't stand by it.
Wow.
You know, hasn't walked back. I'm sure all the racist things he's ever tweeted, but this one he took back.
Okay.
And I just had an image of like Bane. Smashing Batman, you know. What will break first? Your body, like the gay right lobby just broke this person's back.
Mm.
And it's kind of beautiful.
So kind of a win for you guys, you know?
Yeah,
for
gay techno fascists and a loss for Hasan Piker.
Got him.
So
yeah. It's happy to see him be upset.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's enough gay stuff. Let's talk about something else.
Well, did we want to talk about him being excluded from the United Kingdom?
Yes, that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was wrong.
Yeah, of course.
The UK, speaking of fascists,
yeah.
they excluded Hasan Piker and Cenk Uygur, who are related. Hasan is his nephew.
Right.
I don't know Hasan at all. I don't care for his political opinions
he's
whatsoever.
Awful. Yeah.
He's awful. He's a communist.
Yeah.
He's
an authoritarian communist.
He loves authoritarians.
Yeah. He's not like a Bernie bro. He is a
Maoist he's a Shay. He's someone who would like who seems cool to idiot progressive liberals, but like would join the revolution in order to murder dissidents.
Who would kill the Bernie bros first.
Yes.
He would put the Bernie bros in the concentration camp first. Yeah.
Bad guy.
Yeah.
Cenk Uygur is not as extreme as him by any stretch of the imagination. I've had him on Rising. I disagree with him sometimes, but he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
The UK said under this most nebulous, I gotta look up this word.
It was
exact
like it wasn't in
again.
The interest of the public.
Possibly
or something like
not conducive to like they qualified it might not be conducive to public order.
Might not be. So what you don't risk it.
What are they even talking about? Can anyone say to me with a straight face that there will be riots in favor of or against or because of or in any way connected to Cenk Uygur speaking at South by Southwest London?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not.
Yeah.
That is an absurd notion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't have the First Amendment.
They can exclude, right.
And they're not citizens. So there is more, even our own government can have more license over when you come into the country.
Yeah.
Once you're in, you get the free speech rights.
Right.
So I'm not making like a legal argument or anything of that nature, but it's just bad that they did that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's so ironic too because they were going to debate Israel, of course, at the Oxford Union debate, which is supposed to be like the last bastion of free speech.
Right.
Clearly, there is no real free speech in the United Kingdom. Right.
Right. This goes to what we're, they are just cracking. This is the Labor government.
Mm-hmm.
And the Home Secretary or the Secretary.
Yeah, it's the Home Secretary.
Like, she's not, she's obviously not pro-Israel at all.
No, she's Muslim, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and it's said a lot of, you know, pro-Palestinian
yes,
things.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so they're just doing censorship of provocative speech in any direction.
Yeah.
Right. They prevented a bunch of right-wing people, that Valentina Gomez woman,
yeah,
you
sure,
know her?
Yeah, yeah, sure, of course.
She's a real fiery Latina.
Yeah. Badass Latina who gets 6% of the vote in the Republican primary.
She's attractive.
Yeah, sure.
Nuts.
Yeah.
She got, again, let her speak. She is not going to cause.
Wasn't she going to take a boat because they wouldn't let her get on the plane?
now she wants to be in a, she's going to sneak into the country.
Great, yeah.
Sneak over the border.
Right? Yeah, great. Right. Got him. Yeah.
Got him. It's bad.
Yeah.
What is this country doing?
The United Kingdom?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just
what
like.
What is this tyrannical little island?
See, it's the nanny state impulse about everything, right?
Yeah.
So in America, at a minimum, say what you want about American politics and about the reach of the American government. But we do have, most people have some sort of bright line when it comes to speech issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always arguing about censorship or whatever, but like, things are pretty good in America and the politics are pretty good.
When it gets transgressed, you get fired, a sue, and you win.
Yeah, and most people are probably going to be on your side, right? Like, hey, I don't like what he said or she said or they said, but, you know, damn it, I'm going to defend their right to say it, right? I think in the UK, there's just like no appreciation for like speech as some sort of special category beyond the normal rights that you hold. And because everything there then is up for grabs and up for nanny state tinkering, like, of course, you'd say you can't post rap lyrics on Facebook, or Hassan Piker can't come give a fiery speech or whatever. In the same way that you'd say, no, that soda has to be, you know, only 8, you know, milliliters, and, you know, we have to have minimum unit pricing for alcohol and all the other
nanny state interventions. Or liters, is that what they have in?
Well, milliliter, yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what they have in the UK.
I think there's 1,000 milliliters in a liter.
I'm so bad at this.
Yeah.
That's the easy one. Yeah.
Can't
but how many cups in a gallon or whatever stupid?
No one knows.
And a quart in a pint.
Literally no one knows.
Yeah.
Literally no one knows.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
I remember getting to that chapter in mathematics in like whatever it is, fourth grade, and being just like,
you're done.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm going to be an English history person.
Yeah. You didn't want to become a French history person because they solve this, right? You know, we're going to divide the country up into blocks.
Yeah.
They're going to add up to 88 because that's the most rational thing. And anyone who, you know, wants to keep fathoms and hogsheads, they get executed.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
Year zero. Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's create a new standard.
Okay.
Let's create our own systems of weights and measurements.
No, that would be unconstitutional.
Can't do it.
Damn. Even the Articles of Confederation was like, okay, you can say how much an ounce of gold is.
One other Hassan Piker related note. I saw, so I'm all over the place with regard to him because I hate him, but now I'm defending him so much.
Curious. You disagree with what he had to say, but you're defending his right to say it.
Wow. Just call me Abraham Lincoln.
you dropped your crown here, sir.
Well, and I'm going to refuse it because we are a democracy with no king. So I'll just set that over there.
You refused the crown, but put on the cape. Very
yes.
good.
Yeah. Hassan Piker, the New York Post did a hit piece on him describing him as a sex pervert, sex obsessed, because.
That does sound bad.
Get this. He likes to receive nudes of women who send them to him.
Yeah. Who send them to him voluntarily.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he watches porn.
Pornography.
Correct. And in fact, he has a laptop that's just for pornography.
Huh. Yeah.
He's a streamer. So I would see why
sense.
You would not have
you don't
pornography
want to Nick Fuentes
on the,
yourself.
On the, right. What was Nick Fuentes like getting
he had
fisted
like
by some cat eared. I just assume. I assume it's the most degenerate.
It was something
gay sex.
It was something filthy, and he left like a tab open when he showed his screen. So yeah, you would understand
octopus,
why you want.
How many tentacles were involved?
Yeah, 7. That's why it's so messed up.
Where's the 8?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So nothing weird or unusual about any of that.
How did this come to light?
I think
the sourcing
I think he
for
said it?
I think
he's just because it's not weird or unusual.
He confessed his perversions.
Yes.
Yeah. Sinister. I mean, I would describe this as sterling behavior, but it's also pretty ordinary behavior in this day and age.
Liking
right?
nude images of women. What are we coming to?
That's probably the most normal thing about him. Yeah.
During the month of June?
Yeah.
How dare he?
Yeah. No heterosexual sex until July 1st.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Ogle's had it backward. It is heterosexual behavior that has no place in this country.
I don't see a heterosexual flag fluttering above City Hall.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly. This is occupied
homosexual occupied government.
By the techno
hog. Yeah. Not the Zog, the hog. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a little bit of a misfire from the Post, who even when I think it is kind of loathsome, I do appreciate much of their tabloid reporting.
It's funny.
It is very funny. They're down to talk about UK free speech issues, right? I mean, this is why free speech has such a low opinion there, is because, like, in America, we have it's fallen, but there's a respect for journalism as, like, keeping the government accountable, right? Mm. Whereas in the UK, journalism exists just to, like, dig through minor celebrities'
upskirt
garbage.
Photos.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the New York Post is the best example of that here in America.
Of the
right?
Daily Mail.
Obviously.
A trash publication.
I know you have your own disputes with them.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay, well, let's move on from sex.
Oh, we're not done with sexting, because we're going to talk about Graham Plantner.
Oh, man, okay.
Who's embroiled in his own little...
another communist receiver. Well, he was sending nudes, and so I guess that's...
Or something. He was talking to... We don't know exactly. He was talking to women.
Yeah,
he had an account.
Catch me up on the...
So what happened is his wife actually went to the campaign at the beginning of the campaign and said, look, we had marital difficulties. I know he was talking to other women. We did counseling over it.
Yeah.
Is this going to come out? I just want the campaign to be aware of it.
Oh, okay. So
and
that was...
someone in the campaign
who's
now like a pissed off ex-staffer went to the news people to report that.
The news people. Yeah.
He had an account on Kick, which
like
I admit
app.
Is a website I've never heard of and I don't know anything about, but it's for sexy talk time.
Yeah.
I guess.
Okay. Wait. Okay. Yeah. So that was a question I had about the story. Was his wife revealing this to the campaign? Was that done maliciously? But it was done. Oh,
no,
like, as,
it was
like,
done prophylactically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And he, I mean, he is doing, I think if you take any one of Graham Plantner's scandals.
Yeah.
It's survivable and even
the tattoo one, I do roll my eyes at. I don't think he knew it was a Nazi tattoo because he's dumb. I think he thought it was like a cool pirate, like skull and crossbones type thing that he like. I do believe.
Yeah,
that.
And you have to be. I was listening to the National Review editors podcast, and they were just like completely convinced he was a neo-Nazi for a while.
No.
And I don't believe that. I could believe, which is what some people have said, is that like he learned it's a Nazi tattoo, and then because he's dumb, like didn't really see that as like a problem, right? But it's hard to. It's also hard to like judge the veracity of, you know, some associate of his from 5 years ago saying, oh yeah, he said he loved his Nazi tattoo, right? Because it's in the middle of a campaign, right?
Right.
And so people are primed to lie and exaggerate.
Right. But this is not lies and exaggeration.
No, this is coming from him. Well, he did lie about it initially, right?
Right.
He was like, he denied it and then was like, oh no, sorry. I denied that I sexted five women. It was actually six, right?
And again, I said this when it was Swalwell stuff, and the Swalwell stuff was worse.
Much worse.
That I don't particularly care about that. I don't want Graham Plantner to be the senator because he's a
socialist.
Far left socialist. Yeah. And what do we say about socialists?
No socialism.
No socialist. So I hope he loses for that reason.
Okay.
I don't really care about any of this stuff. But it's like you said, it's been enough scandals now.
That's like, okay, that you have a problem.
Things that people describe as scandals, even if each one of these you could pick apart for some reason as like being not quite as, it's the whiff of scandal has now consumed him. So.
Yeah, it's like you're damaged.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting because like so much of this stuff just doesn't matter anymore because Congress, to the degree it does anything, is just like get in line and vote with the party.
Right. So
right? No one exercises any sort of individual judgment.
Right.
And therefore issues of character, like I hate to say it, but just like practically don't matter.
Well, and he is up against one of the only people who does exercise
a little bit
some
of judgment,
of judgment and independence.
Right. Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, if I could have it my way, I would definitely have Susan Collins win that one and then like James Tallarico win in Texas to punish the Ken Paxton faction.
I think
that would
be
most satisfying if that was the outcome. punish a little bit of extremism.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Not
I think
that
that's right.
I tell Rico is going to be terrible, and Susan Platt, Susan Plattner, Susan Collins, has demonstrated independence, but much of that independence in a direction I don't even agree with. Right.
More
more
willing to spend money.
Right.
Yeah.
She voted against Amy Coney Barrett, who I've actually thought is perfectly fine as a justice. So
she's a big fan of funneling a bunch of money to Wuhan factories without any strings attached. Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah.
So these are, not huge stakes for us as libertarians because they're just kind of all bad.
Yeah, but this is how low we are in the political moment. We're just like, I'll take someone who exercises just like they have one independent thought.
Yes. Even if the thought is one I don't like.
Right. I'll take it. You are not a literal robot mashing a button.
Yes.
That is, if you can you pass a partisan CAPTCHA test, then I will take you. Right. That or... you have at least one redeeming element of your personal character. Yeah. You are not in every possible way a gigantic scumbag.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not literally indicted for corruption and bribery.
While cheating on your wife.
Right.
Yeah.
But that, with also misappropriating funds. Great. Great.
Yeah.
Congressman.
That's democracy.
I know.
Yeah.
It's not so great.
It's pretty bad right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the flip side, though, is, look, if there's any budding, libertarian dictator worshippers, a philosopher king who's going to liberate us all, if there's any people
listening,
I was listening
telling Lindsay
like
that I succumbed to that temptation this morning.
No, dude, because it would be.
I was succumbing.
Dude, it's going to be. Stop. It's coming. it's going to be the exact same thing as everything we just described. There's going to be a bunch of Ken Paxtons. The only difference is you can't vote them out of office.
I know. Stop ruining my fun.
I'm sorry. I know I'm just telling you over and over again, ice cream has calories, but that's
no, that's what if it'd be an extraordinary William Penn type person?
Yeah, who pays the Indians for their land.
And believes in good things and
society of friends. Yeah, Quaker. Yeah. I like the Quaker.
William Penn is like the most appealing historical person I could think of in a split second.
Yeah,
great guy.
Yeah,
really
remarkable. A nice guy. Yeah,
nice guy.
Yeah, whatever my theological qualms.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Tried to do right by everyone around him. I mean, he was kind of like the wokester of his day, but in a world where women are in, minorities are treated as literal property.
Right.
It's probably a little wokeism is okay. It's forgivable.
Right. Very non-coercive in his dealings with others.
Yes.
And that's a good
thing.
That's
respect. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No sexting scandals from William
Penn.
No,
you would not get. No, sorry, Bob. How did they sext in Puritan times?
You ever read any John Donne poetry?
Not that much.
They're
poetry.
They're writing beautiful poems about how horny they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a poem where it's, I feel like technology actually does kind of erode the culture a little bit because this is considered an excellent poem.
Yeah.
But it's literally about he's trying to hook up with this girl and he's writing her a poem and he's like, "You let a flea bite you and a flea is disgusting. I'm clearly better than the flea, and you're not even going to let me,
Good stuff.
But this is, this is the poet, for whom the bell tolls, right? You
mm-hmm.
know, so a renowned artist, right? But if you got caught, texting someone that on Kik, you'd be like, wow, what a fucking pervert, It's like, he's a flea? He likes fleas? And then it would get misreported in the post, and,
Yeah, I think I mentioned I'm reading Dracula for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and it is striking to me how much of a romance story or how much just romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mina Harker, the Harkers are very passionate about their love in a Victorian time where it's not graphic or sexual in any way, but they wear their hearts on their sleeves in this book. They're always talking about how much they love each other.
Yeah.
And it's kind of moving. It's nice.
Well, that's the, I don't want to spoil too much. Right. But that is kind of the cautionary tale of Dracula, right? Is that, your love and your passion and some of your lusts even invite these demonic forces into your life.
Really? I'm not sure I've gotten that so far.
Well,
but interesting.
I listen to a whole podcast on the books. So who knows better than me?
I'm actually not quite sure how far in it I am because I listen to it on audiobooks, but they seem to, the people who have had encounters with Dracula seem to have just been unlucky, really, more than anything, or naively good-natured in a they treat strangers well and they're being taken advantage of by this you know, centuries old monstrous entity that wants to eat them. And their just assumption that, oh, I would help you. Like Jonathan Harker, the main kind of main character, one of the narrators, travels to Transylvania to help him. I mean, he's employed by him to deal with a property movement. You know, he wants to relocate to London and just wants to do a good job and then comes to realize what he's dealing with. And that's for the other characters. So
okay.
I'll see if I agree with that by the end.
Okay. Next.
There's
week.
A lot of Christian themes in the book. That's very clear.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. At the time, science and religion not being in conflict yet at all. So like Van Helsing, the most learned person there who's a scientist and a lawyer, and he's a great man of reason and rationality, is also like he's wielding a crucifix to fight this demonic force. Like he's also a religious scholar and an expert in the supernatural, and those things all being not intention. It's not, there's no,
I wonder,
religion versus faith versus reason. No, these are very at the time understood to be at the cutting edge of better understanding your religion is science.
Well, I'm curious about that. I wonder if at the time maybe that would actually have seemed kind of incongruous, right?
Yeah.
Incongruous. When did this come out? The 1800s, right?
Yeah. 1850?
It's a time
like
of Victorian, you know, rationalism, right? And Darwin and, you know, stuff like that. So it's like, there is maybe this divide between science and religion, and then he's an interesting character because he's merging the two. I don't know. I'd be interested to know kind of like more of the historical context of how people read that character. Let me ask you this question. Okay. There's times when science, religion, very in conflict, right? The Soviet Union, French Revolution, you know, times like this. Where do you think we are, 1 to 10, on the science versus religion scale?
That's interesting.
10 being most conflict, 0 being least conflict.
I think we are actually in a period of escalating conflict with the Pope leading the charge against our concerns for AI.
But that was so interesting about the encyclical.
Yeah.
It was not
full on conflict.
It was not saying that like AI is the devil's work. You're conjuring demons, right? It was trying to put this technology in the appropriate box and tell people how they should orientate themselves to it, right? Whereas you can imagine, I mean, it's kind of silly to think of, but like AI in the, I don't know, 1400s or 1100s, quite likely more, be like, well, this is the devil's work, and so it must be prohibited, right?
I think it's interesting to think about this in terms of, as we always go to this well, Catholicism instead of Protestantism.
Oh, sure, yeah.
As Catholicism becomes a more politically salient and really rising religious tradition in the U.S. right now is displacing Protestantism, at least in terms of like, you know, importance to the Republican Party and the government right now. Certainly. Yeah. I'm not saying, I don't know the membership numbers overall, although I think it is having a resurgence compared to other things. Again, at the cutting edge of science throughout the Middle Ages,
it was the Catholic Church and
there was a lot of things working in tandem to a great degree, although there are of course famous instances of the Catholic Church, you know, denouncing Galileo and all that and working
that one's a little
bit
more
fight.
Complicated than,
you know, he was asking for it, he was being a real dick. Simplicio, what do you think was going to happen, man?
Come on
Whereas some strains of, you know, like deep evangelical Protestantism,
it's anti-intellectual.
You think of it as very anti-science. Also Protestantism has been a vehicle for capitalism in this country that is kind of like pro-technology for profit in some way.
Yeah, like prosperity gospel.
Prosperity
kind of
gospel, yeah.
Yeah, Protestantism has a... at least certain strands of it have a much easier time with the free market than Catholicism. I will concede that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Protestantism is interesting because there is, on the one hand, part of the move is just like stripping away what they see as like superstition and the, you know, irrationality of the Catholic Church, right? That's what they're rebelling against, this priestly class.
But then, like, doing that and putting more emphasis on a holy book of specific instructions
Well, that's why
literal that
yeah, that's
it
why
also puts you in tension with the scientific tradition.
Well, that's why I think like Protestantism, like the more you play it out, goes one of two ways, right? You either have like kind of anti-intellectual evangelicalism, or it's like, you know, I will interpret the Bible myself and will therefore reject geology, right? Or you have people who just become atheists, right?
Right.
So they're like, oh, that's superstition.
Right.
And then I guess this is superstition, and on and on and on until you're like, okay, no, I'm just an atheist now.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. The Catholic Church charts a middle ground course through this.
Yeah.
Where they're like, they're Tony Soprano. This is the one with Pope. You like the one with Pope. I like some Pope. The Catholic Church likes some science.
Right. And then the evangelical throws the phone.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, I think Catholicism is, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of clergy have been scientists, created, you know, great discoverers. Gregor Mendel, Big Bang Theory.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But because it is such a, you know, rational faith and reason, right? As Thomas Aquinas would say, it's comfortable with science, right?
Yeah.
So.
Van Helsing is, well, he's Dutch, so he's a Dutch Christian.
So he must be Protestant.
Yeah, he's definitely not Catholic.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting.
Well, that's why he's going to hell soon. Just kidding. Who knows? Who knows where? But you're liking it. You're liking the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It slowed down a little bit. I really liked it in the beginning when they were still in the stages kind of understanding the horror they're up against or like unaware of what they're dealing with. Because you really feel very sorry for all these characters that are suffering so much. Now it's all out in the open and they're kind of making their plan to defeat him.
Yeah.
And it's very side questy. It's very like we have to literally collect the boxes of dirt that he's brought from Transylvania and we have to like destroy them.
You like a side quest though.
I do. It's not it's just very little. Like we're just going to where the boxes are and destroying them.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about making their plan and worrying about it without there's not so much tension in this part of it.
Yeah. Okay.
But
that's what I've heard is it kind of drags in the middle too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm seeing the dragon.
I was camping this weekend and I brought along with me because we were going to be in like the Shire country of Northern Virginia. I brought Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, good for you.
So I read a little bit of it and just like, you forget what it, just like an amazing classic it is because he starts by.
There's so much camping in the first.
It's a lot of camping,
third of the book.
A lot of camping, which I enjoy. Some people might find tiresome, but I really like that.
When I read it in the fifth grade, I definitely found it a little tiresome. But.
Yeah. Sure. Well, have you read it since?
Not in a long time.
You should
I've
go
read
back.
It since, but not a long, long time.
Yeah, I read it for the on like my dad read the books to me when I was a kid, and then I went back and read them as an adult a couple of years ago. And I think I might just take the plunge and do it again. But yeah, it's just like it's so from the get from the jump, it's just genius because Tolkien is describing like the book The Hobbit, which exists both in the world of The Lord of the Rings and in our world, right? And it's such a clever way of like transcending the real and the literary, which in Tolkien's mind is kind of confused, right? I mean, confused sounds like a criticism, but like he puts so much effort into making, you know, The Lord of the Rings have like a real history and a myth and everything else, right? And so to start that way by taking a book that exists in both worlds and he's like, we call it this thing, but he calls it, you know, Bilbo calls it that thing, you know, there and back again. And it's just like such a great way to just kind of like slide into this fictional universe, right? Whereas obviously, honestly, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to crack open another book again because then it just hits you in the face with you're in a different environment, you know?
Yeah, a lot of writers used to care, I think, a lot about how the work would be presented as, well, like in Dracula, it's all, they spend so much time explaining about, oh yeah, Mina is copying, is transcribing things everybody's saying and collecting them in some little binder because she's the group secretary. So that's why you're hearing the story because there exists huge amounts of physical copies of all of the what's happening that they're copying. And then Dracula burns them like, okay, we have to do it again. We have to do our meeting again because I need to write this down or else you wouldn't be reading this right now. You, the reader, unless we put it in the book that we wrote a book about it.
Oh, that's
it's kind of funny.
Yeah, sure. A lot of fourth wall breaking.
Yeah.
Is that.
Well, like in Agatha Christie, which I love so much. Right. The conceit is that Hastings, the sidekick to Poirot, is trying his hand at a little, you know, freelance writing and is, you know, composing a book about the adventure. So he's
Watson and Sherlock Holmes.
Right. So he's always got to fill in. Poirot has to fill him in if he has a little side adventure and say, here's what happened. And
because obviously I wouldn't. How would this book have gotten here?
Or else how would you be reading it?
Yeah, I actually kind of like that, though. Yeah, it does. It blurs the boundaries between fiction and reality.
Yeah.
Right? This work came to us from this other universe. I like that. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's pretty good.
It's good stuff.
Good stuff. What do we got on the list there?
We've got sleep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, man.
What about sleep?
Oh, huge, huge fan. It's tough between...
I don't sleep well.
No? You don't like Dope Smoker? It's a great... it's an hour-long song, but it's a classic.
What are you talking about?
Sleep. The band, the metal band Sleep.
Oh, you got me. No,
what are you
talking
about?
I was talking about the state of being.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't really have anything to say about that next. No, I'm just kidding. Have you seen there's Hard Times, which is like a punk satire website?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I'm just such a huge fan.
Shut the fuck up. Indulge me here for a second. There was an article where it was like, sleep fan participating in sleep study is disappointed but cooperative.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Okay, what did you want to say about sleep? I'll try to stay awake.
Oh, I thought you wanted to say something about sleep.
That was my little joke.
I got it. Yeah. I'm a light sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up a lot.
Yeah. Do you find it easy to fall asleep?
Not easy, but not impossible.
Yeah.
But then the problem is I just wake up very frequently. I wake up the slightest noise, the slightest disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up in anticipation of my alarm going off. My alarm goes off at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And all this week I've woken up at 5:15 and been like, well, I'm going to be barely asleep again by the time this thing goes off.
Yeah.
Because I jump out of bed at 6, I go straight to the gym, and I got my morning is there's not a free minute.
Yeah.
If my husband tries to say more than 9 words to me in the morning, I'm like, oh, I'm out of time. You have to. There's not a single minute to spare.
Yeah.
We get to rising just in time to get me through the makeup chair and into the actual studio to record, because we're live now. Rising has not always been live, but for the last year or so, it's been because it's actually live on television.
Yeah.
So in the old days, we used to. You know, if I rolled in late or the co-host was late, it was fine. Sometimes we wouldn't even film. We'd just be behind and we would film like one segment during the first hour and then we just film later. We could do all sorts of things.
Huh.
Now it is live on TV.
So you gotta be there.
We gotta be there. At 9 a.m. It starts rolling.
Damn. It's a lot of pressure in the morning.
And I've decided I have to go, you know, I gotta go to the gym. I just will not do it if I put it off. If I say, I'll go after work. Whatever, I'll go at night. I won't do it. I'll skip it every single time.
See,
can't do it.
I'm the exact opposite. Where if I tell myself I'm going to do all these productive things in the morning, when it comes time to do them, I realize staying in bed is much nicer, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I like exercising in the evenings. It's like, you know, you've been sitting in a chair all day and, you know, you want to be alone with your thoughts.
It's 1 o'clock in the evenings.
So this is, actually, in some ways, this is kind of a benefit, right?
Stop your horrible, reckless binge drinking.
Alcoholism, right. If you start drinking at 8 instead of 5, you know, then you're a little more responsible.
Yeah.
No, but this is the downside, of course, is then... things happen in the evening, right? So you have conflicts between, am I going to go to...
We have things to do almost every evening that there
is.
There's a lot to do.
It's a very social place.
We got events to do.
Yeah.
There are events. If we wanted to, there could be an event every single night. There's at least one thing I want to do on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, usually two.
With a minimal amount of networking,
yeah,
you could eat and drink for free for the entire time.
That's what we all did as interns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still go to those events eating and drinking as if I am an intern because I can't. That's why I drink such an abhorrent amount. These events.
Free. The price.
I can't.
The price is right.
I can't shake it even though I can afford my own booze now.
Yeah. Price is right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, it's got to be the morning. I got to get up and do it. Now also, I live in a building with a nice gym, so I don't have to go anywhere. I'm literally in the gym 90 seconds after I get up.
Yeah. I'm like a 20-minute walk from mine.
And so. I like... the crowd in my gym in the morning.
Because
I
like the people who are there. Serious people.
And it's always the same people. Mm-hmm. And you know how I hate things that are different.
Mm-hmm.
So I like just seeing those people.
Late at night. Yeah, you told me.
It's much busier at other times. You know, there's people who just sit on the equipment. They're not even using it. They're in my way. I hate that.
Yeah, that's evening gym is the worst because it's both the busiest and filled with the most people who don't understand the
peasants.
Rules. Yeah. Yeah.
The flabbies.
What did we...
They're impure.
Yeah.
We'll see how they survive during gay techno-fascism.
Yeah, that's why you like the early morning. Yeah. It's the lean SS crew.
Yes.
The pot-bellied SA losers of afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Very good sleep. Yeah, I could use more of it. It's just...
How many hours you get?
A night? Yeah, I
got to get eight.
No,
it's hard to get
not even close. Not even close. I mean, the problem is my prime sleeping time is like 8 in the morning to 11:30, you know, which obviously doesn't work for a normal man's schedule, a 9-to-5 schedule. And so I'm just perpetually tired in the morning. And it doesn't work, you know, like I will get myself tired, you know, I'll get up at a normal time and I'll go through the whole day, you know, I'll cut off the caffeine early. And, you know, get some exercise in the evening and, you know, still I'm there at fucking 1:30 being like, oh, what's going on? Right.
Yeah.
Do you,
I don't have the license to do that anymore. Cause I have to
show
up. It kind
of forces you
to this
show.
I'm getting up at 6. So that means I want 8 hours of sleep consistently. That really means I should be asleep at 10 o'clock, which is just impossible.
Yeah,
it's very hard to be asleep at 10 o'clock. Like what? Yeah. Right. If you're a child, no, but. I'm an adult human man.
Yeah.
I'm 38 years old almost. So,
as I mentioned, I went camping this weekend.
On the outdoors.
Outdoors.
I you think slept that actually, on the ground.
Yeah, but when you're, you know, I think that's honestly what we have to do to
where
get
your
back to
kind
the sleep
belongs.
Schedules. Yeah, slithering. Yes. Yeah, I slithered into my sleeping bag like a shell of a snail. You know, when you're up with the sun, basically, you know. You're tired at the end of the day.
I've never gone camping ever.
That's crazy.
I mean, I've gone like, I've been at a campfire. I've never slept in a tent.
That's crazy.
Never slept.
You have
in
to
a
sleep
tent.
In a tent.
Probably won't.
You have to. What?
I don't. I have not, no desire to do that.
It's the 250th. This is an American activity.
Yeah, I don't. I'll be in the cabin inside, and I'll come down to the tent.
You might as well be with the British. That's how I think of it.
I'm a
Valley Forge. Great camping experience for all involved.
Hmm. sneak in during Christmas to go massacre those Brits.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, they
the war doesn't sleep.
Yeah, Prussians. I think they were Prussians, right?
Yeah,
but, yeah. Got them.
Got them. Yeah.
I guess it's a historic myth that they were hungover from celebrating Christmas. So
the Prussians were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were always hungover. Yeah. Talk about alcoholics.
Yeah.
Prussians? Oh.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
All right. What else? Do we have anything serious?
Oh, yeah. We have. I wanted to recollect a certain tweet from 6 years ago.
I'm sorry.
We're celebrating the 6th anniversary of the dumbest fucking tweet of all time. And actually, that's unfair to it because it's just the tweet is an NPR article
about
summarizing a letter from
public health officials,
public health experts.
Yeah, I guess many of them are not, in fact, officials.
Saying that this is summer 2020. We're all in lockdown. This is a time period when it's become clear that 15 days to slow the spread was a lie.
Yes.
We are not staying locked down for just 15 days.
People are getting antsy.
We are staying locked down as long as they can possibly keep us shut in our homes. People are not going to funerals, church services, school, work. All socially desirable things have been shut down. Mass protesting breaks out because of George Floyd, racial justice protesting.
And people also want an excuse to be outside.
Yes, that's why. No, I was there because of the racism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And because of the anti-racism, I mean. And the public health officials, you would have expected, based on what they had to say about going to church or going to school or whatever, you would expect them to say, we get it, but you just can't. That is not what they said. What they said is, well, racism is also a disease and protesting is the cure. So we will not condemn this.
Yep.
They
yep.
used, we will not condemn this.
Yep.
So I went back and looked at the letter. It was actually more absurd than I remembered it being. Yeah. It was far more outrageous.
It starts by condemning the anti-lockdown
protesters
as a public health risk.
Yes.
But.
And then says, but we will not make that claim about these protests.
Because racism is a public health
risk. Like they
itself.
Set up the contrast.
Yes.
It's not us going, but wait, but you said about, they're saying, yes, we know we said this. Remember when we said this about protesting for any other reason?
Yeah.
We stand by that.
Yeah.
We do, but for protesting for this reason, it is good and necessary and you should do it.
Yeah, right.
And I was thinking something that occurred to me is that actually, if I did share this viewpoint now with hindsight, if my viewpoint was that racism is a disease as infectious and bad as COVID, they should have said, and that's why it is important to stay shut in your homes and not go and protest and burn down every city and generate right. a massive backlash yeah, against sure. this yeah. That has made the concept of criminal justice reform
a complete
much
non-starter.
More fraught. We say this as libertarians who endorse many aspects of criminal justice reform, it was one of the great successes of our way of thinking that throughout the 20-teens, there was some bipartisan support for limiting some excesses of the criminal justice system, no-knock raids, sentencing reform, so on and so forth. That has gone so far backward, or at least the public support, the bipartisan support has gone backward on that, making it into a racial justice issue instead of just like the government should be accountable to the citizens. That's how I would always frame the issue to get, that's how you get grandpa on board.
Yeah.
You're kind of racist grandpa. He doesn't care about racial justice, but, you know, hands off my, you know, my sovereign rights. That's the framing you use to win over the other people.
Yeah.
No, they made
it. Sovereign citizen arguments.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Federal law, that is an admiralty court that has no authority over me. That is how you make the criminal justice.
That's how you sell grandpa. They made it about, it's just about race, and making things about race poisons everything.
Yeah.
So now there's less support for these ideas than there was 10 years ago.
Well, it was kind of a
good job, everybody.
It was like a three-step process, right? So it became the conversation after Ferguson became racialized, right? Which made it polarizing, but maybe you could still make the argument, well, this is still correct because of systemic racism, whatever. But then the version of race that the advocates were invoking just became increasingly insane, right?
Right.
The hardcore woke, I'm going to read racism into everything.
Right.
Oh, look at this picture. It's black and white, you know?
Well, and frankly, including the inciting incident, which was about, I say this, I get yelled at every time I say this, but I'm not doing any revisionism on the crime that occurred, what happened to George Floyd at all. It was wrong.
Oh, I thought you were going back to Michael Brown, but
I think the officer was correctly punished because he violated protocol, and there was no need. There was no reason to lay on that man's neck like that. George Floyd was not a danger to anyone. They should have just handcuffed him, put him in the car. And so I support. I'm not one of those a lot of right wing people are and he did nothing wrong or blah blah blah. Or the drugs killed him. Blah blah. Yeah. No, none of that. But there's no evidence that it was racially motivated.
Oh, this sure. Yeah. Thing. Yeah. Sure.
So this is the inciting incident for a giant racial reckoning of police, but it's not
under the woke framework. That's actually kind of peripheral, right? It doesn't matter. The fact that it is a white cop, black man.
That's good enough.
And actually, it wouldn't even, if it was a black cop and a black man, it would still be racism because the police are fundamentally racist.
For sure.
So the conversation got racialized. The ideology around race got radicalized. And then all of this precipitated a summer of violent riots where the most annoying public health officials in the country were telling you this is completely fine.
This is
and
good.
This is good.
This is the solution.
Normal life.
This is the antibiotic for this.
Yes, right. Normal life is bad, though.
Yeah.
That's too dangerous.
Yes.
You're not allowed to do that. And so, of course, it drove the country crazy, right?
It's a big red pilling incident.
I think this was kind of like peak. This is the document that marks peak woke, yeah. I think. Right?
This is the prime red pilling incident.
Yes. And it's been, they didn't know it. They didn't know it at the time.
No.
But it's been all downhill from since. This was the Hitler order to invade the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you're like, you guys were winning for a couple months after that.
Yeah.
And then it's just been a long, slow retreat.
This
right?
is when the tide turns.
Right. Yeah. Right. And now we're at the point where like the Russians are invading like East Prussia. And we're like, oh, okay, these guys are kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, I'm going to pull it up if I can, if you'll indulge me.
Someone, I shall indulge.
Someone tagged me in a article I wrote that I completely forgot I wrote, but just like laying out the, at the time, you know, it's because Nick Gillespie retweeted the NPR tweet, right? And then, of course, there's some douchebag troll being like, where was reason on the lockdowns, right? And so
we were against them.
Yeah. And so someone is one of our loyal readers was providing some evidence of this. And it was me covering Contra Costa County in California, their lockdown order, which initially said you can have 100 people for a protest, but you can't have, but it was still, you're limited to a 12-person social bubble for religious gatherings. Then they came back and changed that pretty quickly.
That's unconstitutional.
Yeah, super unconstitutional. But then they had, I was like going back and like reading the article and I forgot how fucking insane this stuff was. Where, okay, so you could have for a religious gathering, you could have 100 people for a protest, you could have 100 people. Everything else, you're limited to a 12-person social bubble. But then there's the social bubble. There's three different types of social bubbles, right? There's a household support unit. There's a child care unit and a children's extracurricular activity unit. Okay. And these are all laid
oh
out.
My
the
God.
Order is about 30 pages and the definitions for these are all laid out in the appendices.
Oh my God.
And so of course everyone is just like throwing up their hands and being like, fuck this. Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We forget.
We
I mean, not you and
insane.
I.
Yeah. Well, I clearly did forget. I forgot how insane it was. Just like that attempt, this ridiculous attempt for like somebody sitting in the county health department to write up all these rules like they make any sense or anyone is going to follow them.
You know how much that person enjoyed doing that.
Oh, they love
because
it.
Because they just love rules and annoying procedures. Because if you work in like a local public health department, like that's what gets you off, man.
Yeah. You want you wash your hands even though you're not an employee, you know, you love it.
Right.
Yeah. You know what?
It's like if someone said, does anyone here want to come up with rules for a new board game that's like resource allocation based? Sign me up. I could do that for our group.
Is this why you hate the lockdowners and public health officials so much? Because you see that impulse in yourself.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't want to design rules for how people live their life in the real world, but certainly in a fictional reality or in a Dungeons and Dragons group or a competitive. Most of mine are gaming related, but yes.
Yeah. It's no good. It's no good. There's a central planner in all of us, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You see people having fun and you say, I could just straighten this a little bit.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I could perfect it.
Yeah. You know what this actually, you know what this brings to mind?
Huh.
I had you write down a series of incomparable or incomprehensible
words. Yes, I wrote down COVID zoning Jews.
Yes. Okay. Happy you brought this up.
of my
okay,
own volition.
So we're talking about the okay, so there's a central planner in all of us, but within a central planner is a beating black heart, you know, of public health authoritarianism.
Yes.
You made a joke on one of these previous episodes about like if you were diming people out about lockdowns, like you would have turned Jews into the Nazis,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, so I just covered for my newsletter, I just covered a zoning case that might go to the Supreme Court. They're petitioning the Supreme Court. But it's a man who, an Orthodox Jewish man from University Heights, suburb of Cleveland in Ohio, who wanted to host a prayer gathering in his home. And then the zoning officials are like, oh, you're not zoned for a religious assembly building. This is a residential. And so like in some ways, it's kind of a typical zoning case, right? You know, it's going to the Supreme Court. They're petitioning right now. I covered the case. But then I'm going back and I'm looking at the case documents and I'm realizing the precipitating incident, the county initially or the city initially saying you're not allowed to have, you know, your Orthodox prayer gathering in your home. When did that come down? January 2021, right? And there was a huge flip out. So what was motivating this? Like the brief describes some anti-Semitic comments. But clearly it was people flipping out about how they're violating the fucking lockdown orders,
oh,
right?
Oh, my God.
And so they're literally turning in the Jews to the city hall. Yeah. Yeah. So that shows you how quickly these things can devolve. And
we turned on each other.
Just like that. Yeah.
People turned on each other.
It was bad. It was bad. Yeah.
It was bad here. This is a city of snitches too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real finger wagging Karens. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wrote this in my article when I recalling the letter, but like it was still at the time where if you were outside, you were masked. And if you didn't wear a mask outside, people would yell at you. Mm-hmm. Like they would viciously call you out. Even if you were walking your dog by yourself by no crowd. You weren't supposed to be in a crowd outside at all.
Like even if like gathering with friends, you felt guilty a little about it, right? It's like, yeah.
Right. It put that was what was so awful. For those of us who are, I mean, you're a pretty social dude. I'm a very social dude. I like to hang out with people. We're just saying we like to go to events, you know, many days of the week, many evenings of the week. There's a lot to do. We have a lot of friends in the city. And it just made for a long time, it ticked the dial into just too inconvenient or too much of a hassle to do anything with anyone.
And every once in a while, someone's going to say you're a bad person for having friends. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It just, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
You know, even, it's crazy too. Like there was stages of getting annoyed and irritated and finally completely opposed to this stuff.
Right.
Because I remember like when it first happened, you know, you have the huge boom in New York of deaths and COVID. Yeah, everyone was like, okay, shit, this is serious, right?
Very serious.
And I think it took me a little while to appreciate that the public health logic being laid out, it just was going to justify endless
because they lied. They did lie. Because the logic they initially put out was, which I understood, was that the hospitals are not ready for the onslaught they're about to get. So we have to depress cases until we have a stockpile of whatever resources are needed at the hospitals. Mm-hmm. The logic was not we're going to try to stop this. Prepare the hospitals. That was a logic that made sense to me. There's an attainable goal. It'll be for 2 weeks. And that was a lie.
Right.
That was the lie.
And then everything else, then it became this ridiculous set of arbitrary restrictions based on trying to
keep cases at a certain, you weren't going to make cases zero, but you had to have cases in some
band so the hospitals didn't get overwhelmed. But that then produced this ridiculous level of, I remember covering a lot of the California stuff and it was just like, oh, we're going to have a six color coded band of permissible businesses that can be open when cases are here, here, and here. And it was just all complete horseshit.
Yeah.
It did nothing. It saved no one. And
there was no different.
It strained the basis of our constitutional government and our very sanity.
It strained our very sanity very badly.
I'm glad that we have this podcast to keep reminding people
to
of
keep
this.
Relitigating it. Yeah. We will relitigate. You're like, you should move on, you know, get new material.
Yeah. Wasn't COVID
bad. lab leak.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Isn't the government caused this in the first place?
So, very man they decided to put in charge of fixing it. Yeah. The one who caused it.
Yeah. It's like if George Bush did 9/11 and then told everyone your neighbor might be Al-Qaeda, so stay home.
Yeah, that definitely didn't happen. No, I was trying to rehabilitate George W. Bush last week. So
that's right.
Let's accuse him of doing 9/11. He's basically
that would be too far.
That would be too far.
Killed less people in the Iraq War.
What else we got? What have you been working on this week? Did you write about anything?
Yeah, well, so I had the newsletter, which was about the homelessness numbers. The annual HUD survey finally came out.
Mm.
And this actually is like another example of like central planning. You ever heard the metaphor of like the drunk who's like looking for his keys under the lamppost because, well, that's where the light is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of similar with the homelessness numbers that the Department of Housing and Urban Development puts out every year, where it's like, this is actually kind of a bad methodology, but it's the numbers you have, so I guess you got to cover it. Do you know how they come up with the homelessness numbers? So it's one night in January. Every homeless service provider that gets federal funding, they which is all of them, right? They count up all the people in the shelters,
mm-hmm.
and then they send out teams of volunteers around the city to literally just count the number of people sleeping on the streets, which, I mean, I guess is how you would do it, but it means that that's obviously not super scientifically rigorous, mm-hmm. right? And so when you're trying to measure like churn and the changes in annual rates, you should be kind of suspect. And then on top of that, there's just like all sorts of things that like make the numbers go haywire that don't really have anything to do with how many homeless people there are in the country. So for instance, like there was a hurricane. They did the count in January, right? Well, that was when a bunch of people in North Carolina were homeless from Hurricane Helene, right? So the numbers went through the roof there. It's like, okay, what does that really tell us? Nothing, right? Or it was really cold in Portland, Oregon, right? So a lot of people moved into warming shelters and therefore were counted when they otherwise wouldn't have been, right? The most interesting dynamic is last year, 2024, the report is delayed by a year, the homelessness numbers like were through the roof. It was like a 20% increase in homelessness, which is unprecedented, right? And it was completely and totally migrants moving to the New York City and Chicago shelter systems. And then it fell this year by about 3%. And basically all the fall is New York and Illinois because the migrant crisis has ended.
This is why bringing facts and numbers and statistics to arguments is good rather than just like randomly making things up or lying or having no idea what you're talking about or no way to defend it.
But, yeah, I'm not going to criticize. Yeah, I mean, those are all fine things to do.
But, but numbers also can lie.
Numbers are can be deceiving as well. They just
lie. Like if you don't, right, if you don't know that very well, I know this about like hate crime statistics, mm-hmm. which I pay a lot of attention to, are just the way they're collected actually it ends up telling you nothing because right. compliance is voluntary.
But
and there's lots of police departments who don't report any data.
Yeah.
And then you get a more, you know, they hire a DEI coordinator and they say, we should report hate crime data. And so then they report hate crime data. Or they, you know, last year they reported one because they did have one hate crime that was something.
Yeah.
And then this year, now they're taking it much more seriously. And they're like, oh, we had 16. Wow, what a, you know, 1,000% increase yeah. in hate crimes right. in wherever yeah. random county yeah. in you think is the most hateful place in America. There'll be headlines. The hate is yeah. lives here.
Right.
No, it's just that they didn't count it before and they're counting it better now.
Yeah, numbers can lie.
Huge problem, counting things more accurately in making phenomena seem like they're getting worse.
With a number comes authority, though, right? That's why they do it, right? To right. justify interventions.
Right.
I mean, it was the same thing with the COVID, you yeah. know? I don't know how wittingly, how consciously this was done.
Right.
But, like, the nonsense of testing people who already have symptoms and then reporting that as if that's, like, a measurement of case spread or whatever. You're all just feeding that. It's an arbitrary number you can point to say we have to go from orange to red or right. whatever else out of some desperate desire to control what is clearly spinning out of control.
Right. Yeah. I do remember going to the testing locations numerous because I wanted any excuse to be able to do things again.
Yeah.
I wanted other people to
yeah.
agree that we can do things again now. So yeah. I was like, I was testing lets me do things. I'll go get it to fine. They had an open.
Yeah.
You just stop by it, they swab your nose, and then you say, see, I don't have it. We can hang out now. Yeah. Just in like some vain hope that this would inspire right. people to feel safer about actually doing
yeah,
things.
Yeah, that was a thing for a while, right?
It's yeah.
like you need a test if you're going to come over to my house or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, again, then the sheer... the first strain wasn't so... I mean, it was wildly contagious compared to other things, but then it was whatever... I think it was Omicron or something.
Yeah.
That was the one
just everyone got it all at once. Yeah.
Every single, a wave.
Yeah.
A cleansing wave that did not spare the sinners.
Or the saints.
Or the saints.
Yeah. Right. Everyone who would, I got my vaccine. I locked
matter.
Down for 2 years. Nope.
Did not
doesn't matter.
Matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't care.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you're a bad person if you
yeah.
got COVID.
Oh,
yeah.
No. I remember we're just bullying people, but yeah, the tweets those people used to send. Well, I finally got it. I've been triple masked for the last 3 years, and I thought it would be. And then they were so certain that they knew how they got it. So, but in a moment of weakness, I stepped outside my apartment for just 2 seconds to watch the sunset, and my mask slipped ever so slightly, and there was a woman walking her cat across the street, and I just know I got it from her because she was being not careful. Like, lady, this is always a woman, to be clear, you are insane. It's not, you have no idea.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's nuts. That's yeah. nuts.
Nuts.
Well,
nutty stuff.
We're beyond that now.
We're beyond that now.
So, yeah. And it'll never happen again, I don't think.
I don't think anyone would suffer this tyranny of expertise to this degree.
We would just refuse to comply.
We would just refuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mm-hmm. And everyone would. or enough people would. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd have a greater split, I guess, from the beginning. Maybe blue states would do things differently than red states if it happened, came to that. Should we just, should we have a national divorce?
No, I think that's a bad idea.
No.
America is good. Yeah. And if we do national divorce, then it's like the worst things that, you know, Republicans and Democrats can do when they have power, like they'll do on their own, you know, like we talked about this, I think maybe on the show before, but like Gavin Newsom wants to throw you in the big house for posting misinformation on Facebook. And the misinformation is Gavin Newsom sucks, right? Like he would lock you up in a second for that, but he can't because of the First Amendment.
That was literally, I rarely applaud a tweet by like a State Department official, but someone, I can find it. I just retweeted it. Oh, this is from Undersecretary of State Sarah Rogers.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But she tweeted, an argument I often hear is, given Germany's unique history, shouldn't we grant it some deference to censor? Here's the kind of thing German censorship extends to. And it's a screenshot from a news article where someone was, a Facebook user was ordered to pay a fine of 2,000 euros after referring to a political figure as lying Fritz. In a comment posted under a police announcement about the chancellor's visit.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. Absurd. That's what they do without the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what a national divorce would get us to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's some states that would just generally be more libertarian without it. But I think there's a good... We talk a lot about how, as libertarians, the state governments can check the federal government in many ways, right? It's maybe something uncomfortable to admit, but I think it's true, is the federal government can also check the excesses of the state government, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Come on. Be a little patriotic. We got the...
No, I'm patriotic. I love America.
You're going to go camping.
I love America.
You're going to stop this national divorce talk, you know?
250.
250.
So
250.
Arbitrary landmark that we're celebrating
for some
reason.
It's the 50th anniversary of the bicentennial.
That's right. That's right. 250 years, is that a long time? Do we consider that a long time?
In like a historical level? No.
Not really.
No. Yeah, that's like
the... I mean, it would be a long time for a dynasty to be in control of
and
a country.
The Constitution has, you know, stayed. I think we have like, do we have the longest in effect Constitution?
Probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, we're a young country. We're a young country.
We are still a young country.
Yeah. But, no, 250 years, not really. Like you look at, you know, golden ages of ancient empires and it's like 250. That's kind of,
I know they just go on for thousands of years. Well, they have no competition.
They have no comp. Right. Yeah. Cause they figured out some minimal understanding of like taxation.
Right.
And how to get
minimal public infrastructure, minimal public order.
Build the roads to move the slave soldiers from one province to another.
We got Rome.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all you need. That's all you need. Yeah.
We've got competition.
Rome's real genius was they got convinced people to buy their own weapons. And so then they could just keep coming up with troops.
Are we at the talk about Rome phase of the podcast?
Well, it's that or we'll just do it offline. You know? we might as well get some of this on the tape. Yeah. I was listening to an interesting, I was reading.
You were reading? You thought you were listening. And then you realized, holy shit, am I reading?
I hear the words
in
but,
my head,
but they're not playing anywhere. Yeah. I was reading about how Romans were able to draw on like huge reserves of manpower, and that's why they like steamrolled all the like Alexandrian successor kingdoms, right? And part of the reason is because they're like, you know, Republican draftees, right? It's like, okay, you have to go fight for the glory of Rome, and you got to buy your own shield and everything, right? Whereas over in the Seleucid Empire or whatever else, they're all mercenaries. And so you have to pay them way more money because you got to buy their equipment and you got to compensate them for the risk they're taking. You know, they're dying for someone else's kingdom, right?
So it's like a sports team of a lesser high school. Like, yeah, you got to buy your own equipment.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was at a relative graduated from high school. I was at their high school graduation, and this school had Wolf Blitzer as the speaker.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
What was this high school?
It was just a really impressive high school in the suburbs of Maryland, and they landed Wolf Blitzer.
Damn.
Yeah.
Does he get paid to do that, you think?
I think he just did it out of goodwill or something. I think he always wanted to...
Did he give a good commencement?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Of course it was great. Yeah. I know. I was reading the program. I'm like, and music by the chorus, and Wolf Blitzer... Wolf Blitzer? What? What? There he is.
Oh, that's crazy.
It was pretty nuts. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think I had a
what was the theme? Follow your dreams.
Or, yeah, that kind of stuff. You know, yeah, okay. He talked about how he got into journalism and you know, unexpected and I mean, it was standard fare, but it was good.
Okay.
And this was like an elite public school in Maryland. I went to Catholic school, so I don't think we had. I think just the religious authority figure spoke. The Pope spoke. Yeah. No, the leader of the, it was the Christian Brothers was my school. Okay. So I think the head brother spoke.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't go to either.
You didn't graduate high school, so you never got to
I did graduate high school, but I was not there for either my my high school graduation or my college graduation.
Really?
And so, yeah, because I had, both times I had like, I lived in Australia, right? And so I graduated.
It was a Crocodile and Dundee or?
That's a stereotype. Yeah. That's an ugly stereotype. Yeah. No, I don't know who the commencement speaker was, but I'd moved back.
Remember
to the States.
To put the shrimp on the bobby.
They call them prawns there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's even, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
To your credit, Australians know nothing about the wider world either. Yeah. So.
My college speaker was Barack Obama.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Really?
He spoke at the University of Michigan commencement in 2010.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when I graduated college.
When he was already president.
He was the sitting president, yeah.
And he came and gave us...
He spoke at the University of Michigan.
Whoa!
Yeah. It was huge. It was a huge get for us, yeah.
Damn.
He was talking to his fans.
Sure.
The undergraduate population at University of Michigan.
Loved.
That was Obama town, let me tell you. The applause was insane.
Roaring.
He's good.
Yeah.
He's a good speaker.
He's an excellent speaker.
You forget now, because actually politicians, there's a higher degree of requirement that you're good on camera, at least. Maybe not necessarily inspiring public speakers, a little bit different.
Not on stage, but on camera.
But very, you have to be expressive publicly now.
Yeah, right.
You can't just, you're going to have to do interview. You have to be on camera. You have to become a social media star. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, but a higher degree of them aspire to do that because it translates to success. So we forget that at the time, man, he was just... In a league of his own in terms of how good at public speaking specifically he was.
Yeah.
An inspirational cadence.
I remember in 2012, we'd just gone through the debates, right? And he did pretty poorly in the first one.
Yeah.
And then, regained his footing in the next two. But it was like, this was, and he was not polling particularly well, right? And so I was like, okay, actually, this might be kind of close, right?
Yeah.
But then I remember coming into my dorm and my roommate's watching the DNC speech and he's just like knocking it out of the park. I'm like, no, this guy's definitely.
And he was up against him and Romney are like, there's a lot of things about both of them I don't like, but are the most, that is a matchup of relatively intellectual people compared to all the other presidential elections. Joe Biden and Donald Trump.
Are you fucking kidding me? I hope that's the bottom. That 2024 debate. Yeah. Two different types of senility on display. Yeah.
Yes.
My goodness. Yeah, that actually is crazy. It's like, okay, you actually have two smart, articulate guys debating each other.
Yeah, we didn't know how good we had it in 2012.
my one hope for all of this, right, is there's not that many presidents, right? So there's not that many presidential debates or whatever. Sometimes people will say, oh, Bill Clinton was the first Democratic president reelected since Harry Truman or something
like
that.
You can always
play
these little statistics games.
Right.
There's so few of them.
And so that gives me some hope that it's like, well, we've only had a couple rounds of really dumb rhetoric and candidates. Maybe we'll get some smart ones coming back, So
I love weird historical presidential trivia facts.
It's pretty easy
that.
To do,
they're,
right?
Yeah. So, there was every Republican ticket for 80 years or something had someone named Bush on it or someone named Nixon on it. And you're how can that possibly be? But it is true.
Republicans have won the popular presidential vote one time in the past 60 years.
Yeah,
or whatever,
something.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not true anymore.
It's
but
good stuff.
Yeah.
They're all left-handed every time or something. There's a shocking number of left-handed.
Yeah. The sinister
Obama
hands.
And McCain were both left-handed in that election. And in the 92 election, Perot, Clinton and H.W. Bush were all left-handed.
Wow. Yeah.
It's weird.
Should have seen him try to shake hands at that debate. Yeah. It's disaster. Yeah.
I'm a lefty, so.
No, I know.
I
Don't.
Yeah, you
keep it under the table. I don't want to see that. Yeah.
This is Pride Month. I can talk about all my perversions now. Yeah, and my left-handedness is dark and sinister.
Yeah, it's funny. My dad was born left-handed, but my grandmother forced him to be right-handed. Mm-hmm. But he's still left-footed. So, yeah.
My people have gone through some real suffering.
Yeah.
It's you smear everything you write, because if you think about you're dragging your hand through what you've just written.
Yeah, well, maybe you should go to some Arabic country or whatever.
Scissors? Don't get me started on scissors. Yeah. You don't even understand how bad scissors are for us.
Look, you're talking to a nut allergy sufferer,
oh,
right?
Oh, please. I don't even believe that's real. That's like long COVID. Yeah, sure, buddy.
Wow. Yeah. No, it's fine.
What are you going to do, break out in hives if I give you nuts?
No, I will die. Every bag of packaged food has a little disclaimer saying this might be poison. Might not. What am I to do? This is what I'm wasting away.
They should have just given you more nuts when you were a kid and you'd be over it by
no,
now.
That's... Okay, people... I know this is the Vinay Prasad thing. Oh, you just got to feed them peanuts when they're young and they'll get over it.
Yeah.
I ate a walnut brownie when I was like 2 and almost fucking died. You know? I had to go to the hospital. Yeah. Then you'd be doing this podcast all alone. And how sad would that be?
Maybe I am doing it all alone. Maybe you died then and I've been hallucinating you this whole time.
I've just been...
This is some sort of mad delusion of mine.
No, but if I think, right, I think, therefore I am. So I can't be purely a figment of your imagination, right?
Are you... you're thinking for sure.
Yeah.
You're definitely thinking.
Okay, well, let's experiment with this. Just stop. Imagine I'm no longer here for a second.
There he goes. All right. No, he's... Okay. I think you're real. You're probably real.
Okay, yeah. We proved it. Yeah. Okay, well, with that, should we go out into the wider world?
Let's wrap it up.
Let's stop looking at these shadows on the podcast studio wall. Let's see him for real.
All right. Sounds good. See you guys next week.